comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show, and Merry Christmas to you all. A couple of quick announcements, and then we'll get into tonight's show. I think you'll find it very interesting and engaging and a bit surprising. If you haven't subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do that. There's really no reason for you not to subscribe. It's absolutely free, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. It's our free weekly newsletter. It comes out each week. We send it to your email, and we don't ever share the email addresses or rent them out or sell them or any of that nonsense. When you subscribe, that's the only thing that email address is used for. So there's really no reason to be in the dark. Take a look at the survival meter. It ain't looking good for the home team. Tomorrow night. Well, I'll get to tomorrow night in just a moment. First, let me say, we have an organization, not really too organized. It's a very, very loose organization of people called the Kevi Knights, who do some things to promote this show. And I want to tell you, first, I appreciate it. And then I want to tell you, it's working. Have you noticed how many people have been calling in of late who are first-time callers, just found out about the show? And folks, you Kevi Knights are the reason that's happening. And I'll tell you, I appreciate it. Plus, I get emails all the time from people that say, hey, you know, I just ran across your show. I saw a posting in a forum, or I saw a link at the bottom of an email, et cetera, et cetera. And I love your show. Well, I'm glad you do. And I want to thank the Kevi Knights for doing what they do that promotes this show. If you want to be a Kevi Knight, send me an email. And you have to use our contact page. Go to the contact page and use suggestion. Just use suggestion, okay? And that will get you through the spam filters. What about tomorrow night? Well, tomorrow night, we're going to be talking with someone that you've all heard about. You've read his books, I'm sure. Nick Redfern is going to be with us tomorrow night. And I think that's especially cool since here we are, you know, nipping right at the heels of Christmas. And he has agreed to be here and has agreed to be on the show with us. So you want to be sure you spread the word. Nick Redfern will be with us tomorrow night. And that will, I am certain, be quite an interesting show. If you've ever read his books, then you know for sure it'll be an interesting show. Tonight, I'm going to take you to places I bet you have never been. Two places, one I know for sure you have never been. The other one I'm 99.99999% certain you've never been, and they are related. We'll be back right after this. have you got all your Christmas shopping done? Everything's ready to go, right? Tonight, because we're doing our open line show for this week tonight, during the breaks, I'm playing some Christmas music from the good folks over at GarageBand.com, the independent artists over there. And I hope you enjoy it, and I hope that you will avail yourself of all the great music that's over there. Most of it you can download for free. GarageBand.com. Well, I told you I'm going to take you to a couple of places. And in order to do that, we're going back in time. We're going back into the 1700s to start with. And Spanish explorers came to the New World. They heard legends. They heard stories from the natives who lived in the Americas. Today we call them Indians, we call them American Indians, we call them Native Americans, we call them First People, or First Americans. We have a lot of different names. But the native peoples that lived in the Americas had stories about a city of gold. Particularly in South America, there was this fable. Or was it a fable? Many hundreds of explorers set out to find the city and died trying. Does it exist? In the process of trying to find the city of gold, one explorer in 1753 actually located a mine, actually several mines of silver and gold, deep, deep, deep in the Amazon jungle. But nobody found the fabled city of gold. In 1925, Colonel Percy Fawcett, who was a British archaeologist and explorer, Colonel Fawcett actually was pretty famous. And Colonel Fawcett, born in 1867, set out on his second expedition into the deep, deep jungle of the Amazon. It's a place called Mato Grosso. And it is thought, or it was thought, up until fairly recently, by all the learned archaeologists, that there is simply no evidence to support the idea that there was ever any kind of civilization living in that deep, dense jungle. A few tribes here and there, but no real civilization. You know, with buildings made of stone and walls and, you know, industry, no real civilization. Well, Colonel Fawcett had heard about this fabled gold city, and he had pretty good information about where it was. He got fairly deep into the jungle on a previous expedition, and his horse died. And he simply had to return. He couldn't go on. There was no way for him to continue the expedition. 1925, Colonel Fawcett went back into that jungle on a second expedition, along with his son, looking for the fabled gold city. He never returned. He disappeared. Well, over 100 rescuers died trying to find and rescue Colonel Fawcett. And they never found any trace of him. There were stories that came out about what happened to him. One story has it that he never intended to return to civilization, but intended to form a commune deep in the jungle. Unsupported story, unsubstantiated. Another story came out that said that Colonel Fawcett was killed, he and his party were killed by some particular Indian tribe. The bodies of the rest of the party were thrown into the river. However, because Colonel Fawcett appeared to be an elderly man, they showed respect to him by giving him a proper burial. And years later, the bones that were supposed to be Colonel Fawcett were given to a guy that had them tested, and he said they are indeed the bones of Colonel Fawcett. But in 1947, down in New Zealand, there was a school teacher by the name of Hugh McCarthy. He was fascinated by Colonel Fawcett and his expeditions and the story of this fabled lost city. And the idea just grew and grew with him that if it's, you know, so many people had this story for so long, it must be real. So he quit his job, sold everything he had, and traveled to Rio de Janeiro to see if he could find Fawcett City once and for all. Now, when Hugh McCarthy, he was 32 years old, when he arrived in Rio de Janeiro, he rented an apartment, and he began to read everything he could get his hands on related to Colonel Hugh Fawcett and his expeditions. And then when he felt that he had read just about everything he could find, he began his expedition. He traveled to an Indian settlement on the eastern fringe of the unexplored region of Mato Grosso. And when he got there, he ran into a missionary by the name of Reverend Jonathan Wells. They became friends, good friends, and the missionary tried to convince Hugh McCarthy that, in fact, there was nothing in that jungle except headhunter Indians. He tried to tell him that it was very dangerous for him to go there, and Hugh McCarthy paid no attention. So when the missionary, Reverend Wells, saw that McCarthy was absolutely determined to go on this trip, he gave him a gift, seven gifts, seven homing pigeons. And they worked out sort of a schedule that each week McCarthy would write a report of his progress. They worked out a special shorthand so that the message would be short and small and easy for this pigeon to carry. And he would put the message on the homing pigeon, and the pigeon would return home to Wells with the report of the expedition. Now, he's supposed to send one each week, and it was 6 weeks before the first homing pigeon arrived. And here's what McCarthy had written. He says that this is the third message. That means that the first two pigeons never made it. So this is the third message, and he says, and I quote, "I am still quite ill from my accident, but the swelling in my leg is gradually receding. Had it not been for these friendly Indians, especially the girl Tana, my body would now be lying in an unmarked grave. The Indians have taken me into their hearts, and I could be happy living here for the rest of my life. When I regained consciousness, I found myself looking into the face of this beautiful girl." Now listen to this. "Her pale blue eyes made me think I had already died and gone to heaven. I have changed her name to Heather and am now teaching her English. Tomorrow I leave to continue my mission. I am told that the mountains which I seek are only 5 days away. God keep you, Hugh. Well, aside from the fact that it's quite obvious Hugh McCarthy fell in love and was quite impressed not only by Heather, Tana, but also by the culture in which she lived. And he said, I could stay here for the rest of my life. But one very interesting thing is that she had pale blue eyes. Don't you find that just a little bit incongruous, or as some of you say it, incongruous, for a Native American, full-blood Native American apparently, living in a tribe with pale blue eyes? Generally, their eyes are brown, dark brown, or black. Does this indicate that she is a descendant of some European explorers, ancestors of hers that maybe were European? Well, obviously Hugh McCarthy had an accident, injured himself, and was nursed back to health. And obviously this Indian tribe didn't fit what Wells had told him about nothing but headhunter Indians living in the jungle. I, as a side note, a personal note, will say that it's been my experience as I've traveled around the world that people are not generally like what the official reports say they are. The official reports usually have an agenda, and people generally tend to be pretty decent individuals. Well, the fourth letter never reached Wells. And then the fifth one arrived by carrier pigeon, and it appeared from the handwriting that Wells' hands must have been shaking as he wrote. And here's what he wrote. I have reached the snow-capped mountains, but am in dire circumstances. Long ago, I abandoned my canoe and threw away my rifle, as it is impractical in the jungle. My food supply has been exhausted, and I am living on berries and wild fruits. The weather has turned cold, and at night I am unable to sleep. I could turn back, as I know Heather, that's the Indian girl with the pale blue eyes, as I know Heather is waiting for me. But having come this far, nothing can stop me from scaling these peaks to either final victory or merciful death. Somewhere in these snow-capped peaks, I hope to find Fawcett's lost city of gold. But should I fail, it was at least a glorious adventure. Pray for me. So he's focused. He's focused on finding Colonel Fawcett's lost city of gold. Well, days and weeks went by. Wells, the missionary, was anxious. He was worried. 3 weeks later, the seventh and last carrier pigeon returned. Now, that means that there were only three of the seven that made it back to Wells. The note which this pigeon carried said this: I know that the soft, cold hands of death will touch me shortly, and in these last moments I can but pray that all the pigeons I sent arrive safely. Writing is difficult and my lucid moments are few, but what a glorious way I have chosen to leave this world. Now listen. I hope my map arrived safely by carrier pigeon number 6, so that you of all people in the world will know the location of this city of gold. Carrier pigeon number 6 never made it. But according to Hugh McCarthy, that pigeon carried a map he had found the lost city of gold. And he wanted the missionary to know where it was located and how to get there. He continues by saying, "It is magnificent and unbelievable, with a golden," what do you suspect he said? A golden great statue? Pyramid. "It is magnificent and unbelievable, with a golden pyramid and exquisite temples. With God's help, you will soon be able to lead an expedition of archaeologists back to this most wonderful of all cities since the beginning of time, and its treasures can be preserved for generations to come. My work is over, and I die happily, knowing that my belief in Fawcett and his lost city of gold was not in vain." Hugh. He found it. What do you suppose happened? Well, when Wells got this message, he was excited to get the message, but he was also excited about what was in it. His friend was talking about dying, and he was talking about having succeeded in finding the lost city of gold. So the missionary rushed down river by canoe to a nearby town, where he chartered a plane to Rio de Janeiro, hoping to interest the authorities in a rescue mission to rescue his friend Hugh McCarthy. They weren't interested. And even though he had these references to the lost city of gold, they said something very interesting. They said that there was no historical evidence for such a lost city. And therefore, they concluded that Hugh McCarthy had lost his mind and was delirious about a lost city of gold, as he wrote. Why is that interesting? Well, it's interesting, ladies and gentlemen, because all historical evidence was once unknown and was discovered by explorers like Hugh McCarthy. But the story doesn't end there. We'll be back. As I said at the beginning, there are rich gold and silver mines in them thar hills. In the deep, dense, dark jungle of Brazil, right at the border with Peru. How do we know that? Well, we know because of historical evidence, historical records that have been discovered. Historical evidence it doesn't exist unless somebody discovers it. And, I mean, it's there, but until someone discovers it. Now, I was having this discussion. One of my majors in college was ancient history, and I had a discussion about this sort of thing with another student, and the other student said, "Well, of course historical evidence exists, even if it hasn't been discovered." And I said, "Well, it does, but for all practical purposes, it doesn't. You can have a warehouse full of documents that document some great event, and everybody forgets that the warehouse is full of those documents. And so there's no evidence of that event, as far as anyone knows. Then one day someone goes in and says, "Well, before we burn this warehouse to the ground, let's see what's in these boxes." So they open the boxes and they find all these documents and films and photographs, and it's all about this historical event. Say, take for instance, Roswell. Somewhere are loads of documents that are very specific about Roswell and that don't have all of that black marks a lot marking them out. Somewhere are the originals. We don't have them, and so that's why investigators and researchers and documentary filmmakers say, well, there's no hard evidence. Yeah, there is, but we haven't discovered it. Well, some records have been discovered from the 16th century about Roberio Diaz. Roberio Diaz was extremely wealthy. His father was half Indian, and his name is Muribeca. And he owned lots and lots of wealth in the form of silver and gold mines. Well, Roberio was extremely wealthy, but he was a commoner. He inherited the mines from his father, and he was extremely wealthy, but he was a commoner. He had no title. And so he went to Spain, and he approached the king, Don Pedro II, and offered him all of his wealth, all of the mines, if he would make him a nobleman, give him a title. So the king signed an order. He wrote an order and signed it and sealed it. And he told Roberio Diaz, when you take, I'm going to put you on a ship, and when you take the ship's captain to those mines so he knows where they're located, then he will unseal the order and you'll have your title. Roberio, as they were getting close to landfall, convinced the captain to open the orders. And when he opened the orders and read them, to Roberio Diaz's dismay, the orders did not appoint him as the Marquis, the Lord, the nobleman of the mines. It simply said that once he had located the mines and shown the location to the captain, then a military contingent would be sent in to secure the area, and he would be made a captain in the military. Roberio Diaz had second thoughts about disclosing where the mines were and refused to do it. And so the king of Spain, by normal, usual, unfortunate but usual political deceit, lost for him and his nation tremendous wealth. And the world lost the location of the mines of Muribeca. They're in the same area. The same area as the fabled gold city. Now you may be saying, well, do you think that city of gold actually exists? I would say the historical evidence is the testimony of an explorer who was dying and who had drawn a map, sent it by pigeon. The pigeon never made it, but he refers to it. Now, if he drew the map with pigeon number 6 and he's not dying until pigeon number 7, then I would say, yes, he found it. Covered by deep, dense jungle, I would say he found it. Now, the story, again, doesn't end there, because the story is not really all about this gold city, this city of gold. Now, it would be fabulous if we could discover its location. But the story is about more than that. The story is about the fact that up until fairly recently, archaeologists, accredited, credentialed archaeologists, said there is no evidence that there was ever any kind of civilization, actual city civilization, in that jungle. There's no evidence. Now remember what they said when Reverend Wells tried to get a rescue party to go find his friend Hugh McCarthy. They said there's no historical evidence for any such city. Well, when someone finds it and someone documents it and you turn that documentation away, you've just turned away the historical evidence. How freaking stupid can you be? Well, unfortunately, in academia, some very intellectually brilliant people can be excessively stupid when it comes to new discoveries. And so now we've lost the Gold City once again. But this story is about that statement, no historical evidence. This story is about the stupidity of academia. The stupidity, and look, I'm not painting everyone with a PhD with this brush. Just most of them. You know what I say, a PhD means piled higher and deeper. As one doctor to another, let me say, doctors, most of us with doctor's degrees are not any smarter than the general population and tend to, because of our egos, to show a great deal of stupidity that holds back human progress. Now, in 1984, a lost city was found in that area. It was not the City of Gold, but it was a city that existed in that very dense jungle, an actual city with buildings, with walls, an actual city. It is called Ingrehill, I-N-G-R-E-J-I-L, Ingrehill. Or actually, because Brazil speaks Portuguese, that would be Ingrigil. It's in the mountains in Bahia State, right on the border with Peru. And up until 1984, the experts in academia said it isn't possible. It just ain't so. There's no historical evidence. As long as you sit in your classroom or your office instead of getting your shovel and heading to the jungle, there will never be any historical evidence. Doctors? Well, it was discovered, and it shook Brazilian archaeology to its core. Now, for those who are watching on KSS-TV, you're now seeing a picture from the air of that city. It's the area that is circled, and it just looks it's some depressions in the side of the mountain that look, the pattern is something sort of like railroad tracks. Let's get a closer up view of it. Now, as I said, the name of this city is if it's Spanish, Ingrehill. If it's Portuguese, it is Ingrigil. All right, pardon me. Now, and you can see a close-up of it there. Now, to a trained archaeologist's eye, this photograph, this aerial photograph, jumps out. That pattern in the side of the mountain doesn't look like anything else that we see in those mountains, does it? That pattern in the side of the mountain that looks like it's depressions that look sort of like a railroad track, or a checkerboard. It doesn't look like anything else in the picture. So that jumps out at the eye when a trained archaeologist looks at it. And if you show this to 1,000 trained archaeologists, 1,000 of them will probably say, well, that looks like there could be some signs of civilization there. Let's get out on the ground and take a closer look. I told you I was going to take you to two places tonight. And I just have taken you to the lost city of Ingrigil. Deep in the Mato Grosso, deep in the jungle, hard to get to, almost impossible to get there. And those depressions in the side of that mountain turned out to be actually the leftovers of a civilization. And up until 1984, everybody getting a PhD in ancient American archaeology or ancient South American archaeology or ancient Brazilian archaeology, anybody that got a PhD in that stuff was saying it cannot be, up until 1984. And there it is. It has been partially uncovered now, and we can see the remains of what looks like a kind of destroyed pyramid, and we can see the sort of the city wall and kind of a almost circular pattern. But there's more to see. You're going to be absolutely shocked. We'll be back right after this. Talking about this lost city of Ingrigil in Brazil, in Bahia State, found in 1984, and it literally shook the Brazilian archaeologist to the core. It absolutely blew away standard accepted peer-reviewed knowledge that there was no evidence of civilization deep in that Mato Grosso jungle. Ancient civilization. None. Standard archaeology. I mean, it was a religious statement of Brazilian archaeologists that there's no evidence of ancient civilization in that jungle. And then it was found. As I said, what's really interesting, that's interesting all by itself. What's interesting about this is once you have an aerial photograph like this, almost all archaeologists will look at that and they will say, that would be interesting. That's a place we need to check. That looks like that could be some civilization there. Now, what's going to be really, really surprising for you and more interesting, I think, is when you realize that what you're looking at is, for those of you on KSS TV, for those who are not, let me describe, they're looking at the picture I've been describing, and there's a blow up, a zoom, an inset, and that inset is somewhere else. That's Mars. When you show archaeologists an aerial photograph with a pattern like that in it, almost all of them will say, that's interesting, that looks like where you need to dig, you need to look, because that looks like it could be signs of civilization. But the instant they know that what they're looking at is not a picture of Earth, it's somewhere else, immediately their mind throws up a curtain and they say, well, it couldn't be. Now, why? Because they are assuming that there never was an intelligent civilization on another planet, just like they assumed that there was no intelligent civilization ever in the jungle of Mato Grosso. The same dumb assumption. And ladies and gentlemen, when I ran across this story of Hugh McCarthy and the gold, the city of gold, and I read that comment by the, quote, authorities in Rio de Janeiro, where they said there's no historical evidence that there was ever any city in the Mato Grosso. When I read that, it jumped right off the page at me, and I said the same dumb assumption was made about the Mato Grosso that gets made about Mars. And it's a dumb assumption. We now are having NASA finally come forward and tell us what we've known all along, and that is that Mars was once very Earth-like. We are now getting some trickles of information that seem to be true coming out of NASA about Mars. Now, they're still holding on to a lot of what I, this is my opinion, I think they're holding on to a lot of fiction about Mars, and a lot of their fiction about Mars has to do with, well, the atmosphere is just so thin that you can't have any water at the surface, any liquid water. It would instantly vaporize. And their own photographs of their own Phoenix lander absolutely prove that's not true. It's got water drops on it. On the leg of the lander, standing right on the surface of Mars where they say it can't happen, there's water. The same dumb assumption that says there is not any possibility that there's ever been an ancient city civilization in that Mato Grosso jungle. That same dumb assumption is the one that's being used for Mars. And, there's no evidence that there's ever been any life there. Nonsense. There's evidence laying everywhere, all over Mars, that there has been life there, and there's methane and ammonia in the atmosphere that tell you there's very likely a lot of life there now because of the methane and the ammonia that's getting into the upper atmosphere. But it's the same curtain that we watch academia throw down. And it's sort of like, think of it this way. You're a new player in a cast. And you go on stage, and just as you walk on stage, they bring the curtain down and tell you to continue the play. And when you say, well, wait, what's going on here? They say, well, there's no audience out there. We'll just do the play right here. That's what they do. It's the same sort of thing. You walk onto the stage of world events as a human, and you see things that you have questions about. The curtain comes down, and they say, pay no attention to what's behind the curtain. It isn't there. Just live your life back here on the stage. Forget about what's beyond the curtain. There's nothing out there. Just forget it. It's that same dumb assumption that kept them from discovering the cities, the gold mines, the silver mines, the gemstone mines, the gold city, I think I mentioned that, and the city of Ingridgil. The same dumb assumption that these doctors of archaeology had that kept them from discovering that is being used to keep us from discovering what's really on the planets of our solar system. The curtain is down, and NASA says, pay no attention to what's behind the curtain. They take pictures of seashells on the surface of Mars, big seashells, conch shells. There they are laying on the surface of Mars. Yes, it's true. And yes, it's in my ebook. And then they say, we're trying to see if there ever has been life on Mars. Duh. They take pictures of what very clearly looks like a very thick pine forest on Mars. And yes, the picture's in my ebook. And then they say, well, you know, we're trying to discover if ever there was life on Mars. Duh. They throw a curtain down when they say there just can't be life on Mars because the atmosphere is too thin. It's 95% carbon dioxide, and there's almost no oxygen. The atmospheric pressure is less than 1%. At the surface, less than 1% of Earth, and you know, it's just impossible that there could be life. The atmospheric pressure is just way too thin, not enough oxygen. There's no water. Water can't exist at the surface. They drop the curtain down like that and want you to believe it. Meanwhile, on the other side of the curtain, they're building an airplane to fly on Mars. How do you do it without air? Meanwhile, they've got pictures of conch shells and trees and other forms of life. Pictures of liquid water on the surface of Mars. All that's on the other side of the curtain. They don't want you to look behind. Now, I hope that you see, from what I've shown you here this evening, I hope that you see that if we show an archaeologist a picture like I've shown you, the archaeologist will say, that looks like a place we ought to dig. Looks like there could be civilization there. And I put up beside that picture an inset that you probably thought was a up-close, more-in-focus shot of exactly the same spot. Ingridgil. But it isn't. It's on Mars. We'll open the phone lines when we come back. Don't go away.
Arizona, this is the Kevin Smith Show.
And welcome back. We have a caller on hold. The telephone lines are open. 623-444-5889 is the main number. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599. And caller, hang on just one moment, and let me read very quickly and answer this flash message from Joshua in South Africa. Joshua wants to know that, he says, since you say that you are not religious, I'm just curious as to why you have so much Christmas theme in the show. Fair question. It is because I resent the fact that Christmas gets attacked. If you did that to Ramadan, there would be war worldwide. And I resent the fact that Christmas comes under attack. Not Ramadan, Christmas. Not Buddhist holidays, Christmas. Not Kwanzaa, Christmas. It's the one that gets attacked, and they try to erase it. And, you know, they say, well, you can't say Merry Christmas, so you have to say Happy Holidays. Nonsense. Hogwash. I believe in freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of religion, and Christians have Christmas. I resent all of the moves by the courts in this country and by the government of this country to erase Christmas. Merry Christmas. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Mike from Kentucky, Kevin, and Merry Christmas to you, to your family, and to your radio audience as well.
Thank you. What's on your mind, Mike?
Well, I was looking at this, these pictures that you were showing from Brazil and the one from Mars, and it's just another little piece of the puzzle that you keep putting out there that we're seeing, and I think that Mars is going to wake up one of these days, and when it does, it's going to be like a full moon in the night sky, and people are not going to know how to react.
Well, you know, I let me put a disclaimer in. I'm not painting all archaeologists nor all scientists when I talk about intellectual mudsuckers. I'm talking about those who sit on the status quo. They're satisfied with the status quo, and they defend the status quo. There are others that are out there looking for discoveries and new information. Those are real scientists. But they are not the ones that generally get into the high positions, you know, at universities and so forth, and on boards. It's the status quo mudsuckers that get there. And having said that, they told us there were no planets outside of our solar system, and they taught that and earned Ph.D. degrees based on it right up till 1995. And now we know they were mudsuckers. Down in Brazil, they said there's no historical evidence of any ancient civilizations in that Mato Grosso jungle. Well, why is there no historical evidence? Because they've been sitting in their chair in their office instead of getting their spade and heading to the jungle. The evidence is out there, and they just were too lazy to go get it. And the same thing happens with Mars and the other planets of this solar system. There are things in those pictures that if it was on Earth, pictures from Mars, pictures from Venus, and other planets, if it was on Earth, anyone looking at it would say, oh, well, that's some ancient civilization there. The instant you reveal that it's on Mars, oh, well, no, it can't be. The curtain comes down and the stupidity goes up. Now let me ask you a question. Mike, when I was showing those pictures and I had them side by side with no labels on them, did you think they were of the same place?
When I first saw it, before you put the labels up, I thought, well, this is an enlargement.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But then after I kind of looked at them a little closer, and I said, I'm not so sure. This might be another Mars picture.
And it turned out to be exactly that.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, if you take that picture that's from Mars, you show it to an archaeologist, tell him this is out in the desert, Do you see anything here that indicates it might be leftovers from a civilization? If you don't tell him it's from Mars, you just tell him it's in the desert, about 1,000 out of 1,000 will say, well, yeah, it looks like it could be. We ought to go dig there. And the instant you say Mars, the curtain comes down and they tell you there's no audience out there beyond the curtain. The play is here on the stage.
That's true. Have you ever wondered, you're talking about these scientists that close their minds to all of this stuff and give forth the party lines, why is it that so-called ETs appear to farmers and hillbillies and tell them and take them and show them all these other planets, but yet these scientists that pull in the curtain cords, they don't go to them. Curtain cords, I mean.
Well, and that shows you that the ETs are smart enough to realize that people very often who have, this is not true of everybody, but people who have a high education, they've got a degree, you earn that degree by agreeing with the professors. So your mind is locked in. I know this. I have them. And I know that if I had talked the stuff that I talk, I could not have gotten the degrees I got. I had to keep my mouth shut. I had to write the papers they wanted written. I had to agree with the professors in order to get the degrees. You can disagree on minute points, but you can't. There's no way you can stare the professor in the face and say, "Sir, you're full of manure." No way to do that and get a degree.
Right. One quick question for you, Kevin. It's not related to this.
Uh-huh.
There's a movie out called Ballyboo, and it's about East Timor and the struggle that once it got independence. What do you know about that movie?
I don't know anything about the movie except that it is out, and I have personally been there. I've personally been at the house where the journalists were executed. And so I would like to see it, but I haven't seen it. I will tell you that as soon as it was decided in Indonesia that they would allow a referendum on independence, and they said if you want to be independent, you can be. Militias that were loyal to Indonesia started roaming the streets and using machetes and guns to hack people to death. They killed literally thousands in the streets to keep them from voting.
Yeah, it's sort of like that other movie, Hotel Rwanda. It kind of reminds me of that.
I have a good friend who was working there during that period of time, and when it all started and the shooting started, the only place of safety was possible safety was to try and get into the UN building, and the UN people had it locked and weren't going to let them in.
Right. Before I retired, I had a gentleman that worked for in shipping receiving. He at one time had been an ambassador in Rwanda, and so we talked quite a bit about that. Yeah. I'll let you go, Kevin. Merry Christmas to you and to all of our listening audience, our brothers and sisters. I hope they have a great and happy Christmas and the new year.
I do, too. Thanks for the call. 623-444-5889 is the number, or you can call me at 888-223-4599. I am interested in what you think about what I shared with you this evening, but it is also open line. We will talk about whatever is on your mind. As long as it's, somewhat within our genre, okay? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Ho, 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 Merry Christmas.
Well, thanks, Santa.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you sound like Brent.
I wonder why.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. What I've done this evening is I've given you a very solid graphic, feet on the earth example of what you hear me talk about all the time. And for those of you that are watching, I showed you pictures of it. From the air, that ancient civilization that isn't supposed to be there can be seen. It is there. And it's the sort of thing that an archaeologist would say, interesting. That's where you need to look. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kev. It's Deb from Columbus.
Hi, Deb.
Hi. Very interesting. When you first started talking about the story about the young Native girl and everything, at first I thought you were talking about El Dorado.
Mm.
Ebola. And then when I listened a little further, I said, no, this is a different story, but it's very, very interesting. exactly, I've been listening to the entire show, but I've also been kind of online looking at email. When did these explorations take place? Was it the early 20th century, or?
They actually started in the 1700s.
Oh, okay.
And there have been many expeditions into that area looking for the city that the natives say, oh yeah, it's there. And the natives, apparently, some of them know where it is, apparently.
Hmm.
They don't tell. And but this Hugh McCarthy, as far as I'm concerned, I think he found it. He drew a map of how to get there and sent it on a pigeon, and the pigeon didn't make it home. And in his next letter, he's dying, and he's talking about what it looks like. And he doesn't see he. Some people I've had this discussion as well. There are people who say, well, you know, when people are dying, they see heaven sometimes. He didn't describe heaven. He described golden pyramids and buildings covered in gold.
Hmm.
He did not describe heaven. He described a city, the map to which he had already dispatched. I think he found it.
It sounds almost like he did. Was this exploration recently, or?
His was in 1947, I believe.
Okay, so yeah, so it's been within the last 50 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And then in 1984, the city that I have been talking about, Ingridgill, was found in 1984.
Now, were there, buildings found there, or...?
Yes. Yeah, and,
really?
And there's... Yeah, and the remains of a pretty eroded, destroyed pyramid.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Was... Another question. I'm just kind of curious. I'm just trying to picture this.
Okay.
Is it sort of like some of the cliffside cities of, like, the ancient Puebloans, or... in Arizona, or is it more like, say, the cities of, like, Machu Picchu or something like that?
What's been excavated of it so far, and there's not a lot that's been done, but it would appear that it would be on the order of the Mayan. Or,
wow.
Pre-Mayan, by a long shot, but something similar to that. And by the way, I didn't say this, and I should have gotten the pictures of it. They found inscriptions on some of the buildings in Ingridgill. And on those inscriptions, I can tell you that it looks, and I read Greek, it looks like Greek, but there's some characters thrown in that aren't quite Greek. Now, let me give you an example. Have you seen Russian writing where they use a backward R?
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, now that letter in the Russian alphabet makes this sound. It makes the sound ya. Okay? It looks like a backwards R, but it sounds like ya. All right. If you take that letter out and a couple of other little symbols out, then you have the Serbian alphabet.
Hmm.
They're that close. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at something that looks like Greek, but it's got some symbols I don't recognize. And above one of the houses, they said the principal house is the, and they showed the inscription. And what I can read, if it's pronounced like the Greek letters, and it looks all Greek. It's pronounced Kufi, but then at the end, after the E sound, Kufi, there's another letter, and it's not Greek. I don't know what it is.
Hmm. Interesting. One more question, and I'm going to get off and let somebody else get on. When you were speaking about the young native girl, Heather, Hugh's Heather,
mm-hmm.
Remember, I guess it was a couple of months back, or it's been a little while back, where I don't know if you discussed it or if you had a guest discussing it, about the some in during World War II, where some of the SS and then the Third Reich regime headed to South America, and you know, a number of generations later, they actually found you know, some of the native peoples with blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Could this possibly be maybe one of this young lady? Could have been one of those, like a descendant of one of those?
No, it was 1947, and the war had ended, you know, just two or three years before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's way deep in the jungle and high up. So it's not likely that any Germans had explored that far up. Most of them went to Argentina and Chile.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And but this is in Brazil, right on its border with Peru.
That's fascinating. That's really fascinating. All right, Kev. Well, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And for folks out there that don't want us to say that to each other, shame on them.
Oh well, they just have to get used to it, you know.
Exactly.
And It doesn't harm any of their rights for you to have your right to say Merry Christmas. So thank you.
You're very welcome, Kev. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
623-444-5889. And the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. Yeah, there's been a very long history of explorers heading into the Mato Grosso and not coming out. But some of them that did come out came out with stories, you know, that the natives have told them about secret cities, hidden cities, and a city of gold. I think Hugh McCarthy must have found it. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, I just wanted to wish everybody out there a Merry Christmas and let all the wimps know that are so sensitive that they block out freedom of speech that if they have a problem with Merry Christmas, then they can go back to their piece of sand where there is no Christmas. Thank you. I'll leave it at that. Have a nice day.
All right. Well, I am not sure what that means. Thanks for the call. I don't mind if someone doesn't want to celebrate Christmas. That's okay. And they don't need to mind when other people do want to celebrate Christmas. I have friends of all religions. Not all, but a bunch of different religions. And on their holidays, I wish them a happy whatever it is. I have Muslim friends that I wish Happy Ramadan. I have Jewish friends. Happy Hanukkah. It's only Christmas that gets attacked. I resent it. I would resent it if you were attacking Ramadan. I would resent it if you were attacking a Buddhist holiday, a Jewish holiday, Muslim holiday, and I resent it when Christmas is attacked. I resent it as someone who believes in freedom. So that's my soapbox. And you know, those of you who listen to this show and you've been listening now for a number of years, I get on this soapbox every year. And every year Christmas gets attacked. Look, if you don't want to celebrate Christmas, don't. If you want to celebrate winter solstice instead, happy winter solstice. I think it's cool. Go for it. But the Christians also have a right. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Brian from Burnaby. Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you, sir. Oh. And Merry Christmas to you.
And now I was just thinking about the inscriptions that you said that were like Greek, and but not exactly Greek. There's a language called Linear A, another one called Linear B,
mm-hmm.
the Minoan civilization, which is in the same area as Greece. And they were also, Linear A has been decoded, and perhaps you might get an expert on to take a look at these writings from your city of Ingersoll and see what whether the expert might be able to help you with the inscriptions.
I'll tell you something. You're right. And I had forgotten about the Minoans. Their alphabet is very similar. And if you think of a K, U, Phi, which is like a circle with a line through it, and it makes a PH sound, and then an I. All of that's there, Kufi, and then some symbol at the end. Hang on, and when we come back from break, I'll get you right back online. All right, caller, we'll be back. We are back. And, caller, are you still with me?
Yes, sir, Kevin.
All right. Now, you mentioned Minoan and Linear A and Linear B. Have you seen those, and do they look like Greek if you have seen them?
They don't. The characters don't look like Greek, but the man who decoded Linear A actually assumed that the language was ancient Greek. And decoded it just by substituting what we call the regular Greek characters now, or the Greek alphabet now, for the characters involved there.
Well, this looks.
If anything, I would imagine that these inscriptions, if they do contain, or if they are somewhat like the Greek language or the Greek characters of today, would probably lend themselves to analysis that way.
Yeah. Well, they are. I don't know that the language is Greek. I do know that those are Greek characters, or they are characters that are in the Greek alphabet. And the first part of the word, if you take the last letter off, it spells K-U-F-I, Kufi.
It's a very interesting that it's a land with pyramids, and that the Great Pyramid is called the Pyramid of Khufu in Egypt.
Isn't it?
Figuring back to yesterday with yesterday's guests on the pyramid being a source of power and I guess eventually that of a weapon, I imagine that a lot of these civilizations who are expending a great deal of energy and time to build a pyramid would only do so if there was some compelling reason to move all those stones into place.
Yeah, and let me say this too. You need to know about this. There was a coin found in the brief excavations that have been done. That coin is has been identified as being a let's see, what do they call it? A Derrick. And what that is it's a gold coin. And it bears the inscription of King Darius of Persia, 521 to 486 B.C.
This would be the King Darius mentioned in the Bible?
Yes.
For the book of Daniel?
That's the one.
Well, that's quite a long time ago.
Yeah, when we talk about ancient, that sounds ancient, doesn't it? And and now, you know, I have in the hard copy here, I have the picture in the hard copy. I don't think anybody can see this, but I'll tell you what I'm going to try and do here. I'm going to try to do something I have never done. I'm going to zoom in on this. There we go. Now, on those who are watching on KSS TV can see Kufi. It's the K, the Upsilon, Phi, and E, Iota. And then some figure that doesn't fit Greek. So it's I don't know. Very, very strange, very interesting. And by the way, there are people who have done close-up zooms on certain things on Mars and have found what appears to be Hebrew letters and some Greek letters carved into stones.
Yes, it would be interesting to get a Semitic or a Hellenic scholar to have a look and see if they can make any more of that.
Yeah. Are you familiar with music? Reading music?
Basically, I read basic music, yeah.
You know what a quarter rest looks like? Looks like a kind of a backwards lightning strike.
Yeah.
Well, that last letter shows up in some more inscriptions, and that's what it is. It's that backwards lightning strike. It looks like a quarter rest in music.
That's interesting. Well, I imagine the music is a great deal, or written music would be a great deal later than that. That's well into the...
Oh, yeah, this is something to do with the alphabet. It just has that shape.
Yeah.
It's got that shape.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call.
To all your listeners there, Kevin, and to you and your family as well.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Have a Merry Christmas. 623-444-5889 is the number to call. Or if you want to call me on the toll-free line, you may do so at 888-223-4599. If you're outside the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message. I have one here from Peter in Colombia, but it's exactly the same one I read the other night. And Peter, I asked the audience that question, and I got no response, but anybody that knows anything about alien abductions taking place in the Ukraine or in Russia, Peter would like to know if you know anything about that, because as he points out, he's heard a lot of UFO reports from there, but no reports of abductions from there. So I don't know the answer to that, so there you go. John in the United Kingdom says, global warming scam, maybe a UFO scam, microchipping, Project Bluebeam. I don't believe anything anymore. John, let me congratulate you. When you stop believing anything, that doesn't mean you have to disbelieve everything. It means you can put your mind in sort of a neutral zone and examine all the evidence and say, okay, that's good. I'll file it away. I now know that information, and we'll see what happens. We'll see what turns out to be true. Old Doris Day song, que sera, sera. Whatever will be, will be. Could UFOs be a cover story for some anti-gravity technology that we have, maybe handed down from some ancient civilization? Could this have been used after 1947? For the superpowers to spy on each other? Would British Petroleum or Shell go bust if this was disclosed? And then he says, some cities in South America were built on top of mountains. Maybe if you are paranoid, you could believe that one day this could be used for some fake UFO invasion. Well, War of the Worlds came first, 1938. Okay, John, thanks for the flash message. This city, Ingrigil, is built on top of a mountain, but it's not right on top. It's just below the top. Kind of a carved depression in the side of the mountain. And fascinating, fascinating find. But don't you find it really fascinating when I had the two pictures side by side? You assumed, most of you, that you were, not all of you maybe, but most of you assumed you were looking at the picture and then a zoom of the city. Weren't you surprised when I put the labels up and one of them is here on Earth and one of them is on Mars? They call it the Inca City. If you look for pictures of it on the internet, just do a search for Inca City, Mars. and you'll find those pictures. It's pretty surprising. And then the thing that pulls those two together is the dumb assumption of the scientists. The dumb assumption of the scientists was there's no historical evidence for any civilization being, ancient civilization being in the Mato Grosso jungle. There's just no historical evidence for that. And now we know there was no historical evidence in their minds because they were too busy resting their behinds. And that same dumb assumption, the same curtain, the same veil of ignorance gets dropped between the public and the real information about what's on the planets. Maybe there's no, I don't know, but maybe there is no actual living civilization on Mars today. I would be one that would say it would be pretty difficult. The conditions would be harsh, but not impossible. Nevertheless, very, very difficult. But to say that there's never been any intelligent civilization on Mars is to drop the curtain and say there's no audience. Just do the play, but there's no audience. So all you people on Earth, just go through the motions and do the play and forget about what's out there. There's nothing there. Nonsense. Complete nonsense. It's asinine. It's dumb. It's stupid. Of course, there's evidence that there has been life on Mars. Have you ever asked yourself this question? If there were no evidence, now they're not talking about it, they're not saying they found it, but if there were no evidence that there has been life on Mars, do you think that they would be spending billions and billions and billions of dollars to go look for the evidence of life on Mars? If you look through the telescopes and there's a point in space at which you see no star, there's a point at which you see no planets, would you build a spaceship and send it over there to look and see if there's a planet? Of course you would not. That would be ignorant, stupid, in the highest order. If there's no evidence in their possession that there has been life on Mars, would they spend billions of dollars to continue going to Mars to look for life on Mars? That makes no sense. Of course they wouldn't do that. It just makes no sense. And what I don't understand is how people who allegedly are educated, they've got a PhD after their name, they got more degrees than a thermometer. You can show them a picture and don't tell them it's Mars. Make sure it's black and white. Show them a picture and they'll say, oh, well, that looks like an ancient city there. Or that looks like there could be a roadway there. It looks like there may be some farmland that's been laid out there. They'll look at that and say that's what it is. Show them, you get my book, Mars Maximum Mystery. It's an e-book, you download it, all right? And then you read it on your computer. All right, look at the picture of the forest that looks like pine trees. It's not a few of them, it's thousands of them. Now, if you show that to anybody and don't tell them it's Mars, they'll say, well, it looks like a forest of pine trees. The instant you tell them it's Mars, they say, oh, well, no, it couldn't be that. It's got to be something else. Oh, duh. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, December the 23rd, 2009. we are open line, and we've got a few minutes left. If you would like to give us a call, and you have something you want to add to the stew, just call up and throw it in the pot. We'll cook it up and see what happens, all right? 623-444-5889 or toll free 888-223-4599. Yeah, on this inscription. Now you need to know, this inscription was found. This was back in the 1700s, and it was. These are ancient records we're looking at, and it could be the same city, Ingridgil. If not, it's another city right in that mountain range. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California again.
Yeah, Bob.
Hey, these topics, I never really got to them. They are so interesting. Regarding the ones in the jungle and some of the photographs we were showing, I want to remind everybody that a treasure hunter once told me that 90% of all the gold on the face of the earth is 10 feet underground. So I just imagine that there is stuff everywhere out there. I mean, we don't have large urban areas digging up things and stuff like that. And as far as the water and life on Mars or the ice and the melting of it, I saw a show last night on Mount Kilimanjaro, and at the very top there's ice and not really plant life, and it's on a volcano top. And the interesting part about Mount Kilimanjaro is as you go down the sides of the slopes, there is more plant life than most places, and the ecosystem has more variety of species than some whole countries on that one mountain. And so it starts out really harsh, and it was kind of interesting because as you go through there, there's some forests of plants that grow 10 times in regular places on Earth. And these are like the only forests like that, and the plants have adapted to do amazing things because apparently it doesn't rain much there. There's a lot of clouds up there, and they've learned to adapt to basically when the clouds go through the areas in some of the rainforesty type areas, it sucks and absorbs it, but it's never like raining on it. And they found out that just through the clouds, most of the water is coming from the clouds, not the ice on the top that is melting. So you can imagine just like alpine forests and things like that, the higher up you go, the less vegetation there is. But so even if that whole planet was a desert, if there's one ice spot, there could be a whole ring of life around that one area. So I appreciate it, and I'll leave you with that.
All right. Thanks for the call. Yeah, well, you know, if you get a hold of the book, Mars Maximum Mystery, you'll see that picture of what looks like a pine forest. I mean, it's pretty clear. And the reason I say it looks like a pine forest, it's a forest, and the trees are shaped like pines. But you'll see snow around. So, there's ice and snow around those trees. I hope that in what I've presented here tonight, I hope you realize several things. I hope you realize that history, the real history of this planet, is pretty much not known to us. It's pretty much not known to the people that have Dr. Dot on their name. The real history of this planet is pretty amazing once you really dig into it. But you have to get out of the office. You have to get out of the classroom. Take the spade, take the pick, and go dig up some dirt. That's how you find this amazing, amazing history. I hope that's one thing that you got from the show tonight. I hope another thing you get from the show tonight is that when we look at those photographs, we assume things that are just not true. And this is not an indictment against anybody that's listening to the show, but many of you, and it was designed specifically for this reason, many of you assumed that the two photographs side by side were the same place. But you see how similar they look, and one is on Mars. One is an ancient city right here on Earth. It doesn't make any rational sense to drop the curtain between them and say, that one can be a city, that one can't. Why? Well, because we know nothing can live on Mars. No, we don't know that. We don't know that at all. What we do know is that there are a great many signs that something's living there now. It doesn't make sense to drop that curtain and say there could never have been an intelligent civilization on Mars. Why would you assume that? We now have NASA admitting that Mars once was very Earth-like. It had lakes and oceans, and they're saying, but we're not sure if it had life. Probably it did because it had water. Well, why would you assume water's necessary? It's not. We can prove that with forms of life right here on Earth. There are forms of life right here on Earth. Water's made of hydrogen and oxygen. And there are forms of life that when you expose them to oxygen, they die. Living on this planet right now, deep under the ground. So it makes no rational, logical sense, does it, to drop the curtain between the pictures of Earth, the pictures of other planets, and say, all the action is back here on the stage. There's no audience out there. That makes no sense. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show, and you'll be our last call for this evening. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Paul from Riley, Kevin. How you doing?
Great. How are you, Paul?
Fantastic. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
I have a question that's a little bit out of the topic tonight. I was wondering if that's okay.
Sure. But we have to do it real quick. We're almost out of time.
All right. Well, our government is deteriorating economic situation. Do you think our government, you will use the technology we've obtained through black ops and the trillions of dollars we spent over the last 50 years in reverse engineering when it comes to UFOs and other devices? Do you think we'll trade that up as collateral with other nations such as China and developing nations?
No.
No?
No, they won't. They may use it for if they have everything we suspect they have, then they may use it to remain a superpower. They may use it to further the police state direction that we've been going now since 9-1-1.
I see. So basically we'll use that as a fallback. I mean, other nations must suspect we have outstanding technologies, considering the amount of money that we spend on black operations that we're all well aware of.
Yeah.
I don't think China or anybody else has spent that kind of money or had the opportunity to dissect these UFOs that have so-called crashed and whatnot.
Yeah, I think you're right. Paul, I have to run. We're facing the end of the show, but I thank you for the call.
Take care, Kevin.
All right. Don't assume that the Russians don't have things just as sophisticated as we have. That would be a bad assumption. They've been working on the same technologies we've been working on, and they've been following basically Tesla technology where we have followed Einsteinian. I wouldn't make an assumption that we're the only ones with really super advanced technology. I don't think we are. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end, and I hope that as we close the show tonight, your eyes have been opened and your mind has been broadened, and I hope your soul and heart have been broadened too. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion. No matter what their religion, happy, whatever their holiday is. Ramadan, Hanukkah, and Merry Christmas. We'll be back tomorrow. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. And until next time, so long, everybody.